Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast, U.S. Open recap edition. First question, we're going to go to DJ Pie. How bad were you sweating it out with Patrick Reed winning back-to-back majors?
I think it would have been tremendous content. For those that didn't know, we asked, starting with the Masters, we said pick one player that is definitely not going to win. The kid here took Patrick Reed, proved to be, you know, not my best moment. So I decided to double down on Patrick Reed, thinking there was no way he was going to win two in a row. And you guys should be apologizing to me because obviously he did not. So
you're sweating it.
You're welcome.
You're sweating. You're changing positions on the couch. You're moving all around.
You played great. It was an awesome start.
I think you paid off Kessler.
I did. Yeah, Kessler stopped laying down eventually.
Gave him a bad number.
Yeah.
Right,
he just started
stretch.
Mailing it in.
You look a lot like when Ricky starts making his leap up the leaderboard.
I will say, Ricky, Randy was strangely confident and steadfast in his put downs of Ricky, as if he could see the future, and he seemed to feel very vindicated when Ricky shot 84 yesterday.
You know what? It was vindication, but I don't think he was. I don't think he takes joy.
Yeah, no, correct.
No, please. Yeah. No, I get no personal pleasure out of this. It's, you know, but I've seen the movie before. I knew how it ended.
All right, Tron, I want to your initial reaction. It wasn't the most exciting Sunday U.S. Open finish, but to Brooks Koepka winning back-to-back majors, what's your reaction to that?
Oh, I mean, it's exceptionally impressive. Of all majors, too, the U.S. Open. Like, I think that's probably the hardest one to win back-to-back. Maybe the British, just because you have to...
The UK British Open.
Yeah, UK British
Open. The UK British Open.
Her Majesty's UK British Open.
Just because, you know, like weather can be a factor in that one. But I think this one on two vastly different courses, like you said earlier, Salah, you know, 16 under last year and then...
Parts irrelevant, but yes.
Yeah. But yeah, so all props to him. I'll leave my other takes for in a bit.
Okay, interesting. Randy?
Yeah, super impressive. I just think he just looked in complete control. I think as we were kind of talking, the most interesting aspect of him now winning two U.S. Opens is he's only had one other PGA Tour win, and he seems like, gosh, he seems like he just has a game to, he should have 10 wins by now. It's just kind of an interesting dynamic. But specific to this week, yeah, super impressive. Especially this weekend, just looked like he was in complete control.
I mean, yeah, I don't know if there's a with him having two majors and one other tour victory. I think we could probably, you know, make our best guess or unpack that. It probably has to do a lot with the setup. I think there, you know, when you have a golf course like this where things really kind of get serious, it seems like you have the premier players kind of rise to the top and the rest tend to fold. So I don't know why that doesn't happen more on, you know, a week-to-week basis on the PGA Tour. But yeah, I mean, there was no moment after his up and down on 12. I don't think, like, we were kind of saying it around the house here that it just didn't seem like it felt over. I think a lot of that had to do with last year too, and kind of kept waiting for him to fall apart last year or waver at all, and it just didn't happen. And today was the same thing. Yeah, it was crazy impressive to see him holding putts, especially in a week where it didn't seem like anybody could really get anything to drop. So
the up and down on 12 was
all world.
Absolutely ignorant.
Yeah. And making four on 11 is probably what won him the championship. Yeah. I mean, yeah, where he was on 11, he said in the interview afterwards, he would have taken five from there because he thought, I mean, he had to chip back into the bunker, getting that up and down from the bunker.
11's such a cool hole.
Going back.
That was the only hole that kind of got, I mean, we'll get into it, I'm sure, but that was the only hole that kind of felt like there was some unpredictability to it today.
Going back to your point about, you know, him only winning one other PGA Tour event, I think the closest comp that we can find is a guy like D.A. Weibring. He won what's now the John Deere Classic. He won it three times. He only won five total tour events.
Well, I was going to say he now has Angel Cabrera's career resume, right? Three wins, yeah. Two majors.
He's from Bloomington, Illinois, I think, too, as well.
You know, he didn't win them back-to-back years or anything like that, but
sure.
I think that's
still impressive.
Speaks volumes.
Another guy like Zach Johnson, who has, what, seven majors?
With the John Deere, yeah.
Six, I think. Four John Deeres and whatever.
And but it's one thing. Masters. He's also got...
Joke is run its course.
Three other top fives in majors. Like yeah. He's played in 18 majors in his career. Seven top tens in them. He finished T4 at the U.S. Open in 2014. Pinehurst, and he's finished in the top five twice at the PGA Championship. Like he's got a big game good. Hunter.
Yeah. He's not even a golfer.
I definitely get the feeling that like he doesn't even really like golf all that much.
Yeah. He wants us to believe that. He wants us to believe that, but I don't believe it. Like you can't be that good at golf without just extreme levels of practice and enjoying.
No, for sure. I just don't think he likes it.
I think he wants us to believe he doesn't. I don't believe him that he doesn't. I mean, the way he talks about it too, just about how like if you listen, you don't even have to listen that closely. The cockiness in a lot of his statements, and it's like he's almost wanting people to like start hating him, and it hasn't really fully happened yet. I mean, I'm sure some people dislike him, but
if you're just really, really, really good, it's hard to fault cockiness.
Yeah, I agree.
You know,
I thought you were going to say when you were trolling us with the comparison there was Angel Cabrera is kind of, you know, a similar sort of just the way that he drives the ball and stuff. I mean, two majors and I think a Greenbrier or something.
Yeah.
He won it out of order. It's still weird to see. What's that?
He won it out of order. He should have never won a regular PGA.
I agree. Just two majors.
My favorite, I tweeted this to Stephanie, my favorite Koepka story that like took my fanhood of him to the next level, which is saying a lot, is the story from the 2015 Open Championship when he was like refusing to play his ball and a rules official was telling him like, you need to keep going. And the rules official comes in and says, I am a sir, the rules official allegedly said, and you will refer to me as such when addressing me. And Koepka said, I don't give a fuck who you are. I'm not playing until my ball stops oscillating.
Like, I wonder what that rules official thought of Phil's play on 13 yesterday.
Whose play is it, Brooks?
We're going to get to Mr.
Had a heart attack.
I do think, though, like that's about kind of caps it on what we have to say about Brooks. He's not the... There's not a whole lot of story there other than he's really, really, really good at golf. And it's really amazing to see somebody win two U.S. Opens. When you just think about how many times Dustin Johnson has been involved in U.S. Opens in the last 10 years and only has one of them. Phil has been involved in all of these for how many years and has never won one. To win two in a row is like it's a big deal.
Yeah. What impresses you guys most about him?
His putting, honestly. I mean, everyone knows how far he hits it, and he hits his irons really pure. But him and like a lot of, like, I think they don't get a lot of credit for how well they putt. JT doesn't get enough credit for how he putts, and DJ also does not get enough credit.
Not only the putting, like some of those 20, 30 yard pitch shots, at least today. But I mean, it's not just the fact that he makes the putts; it's that they look so, like, no doubt. Yeah. They're dead center cut, and you know, it's like I don't like. When I'm watching him and I want excitement and I want I was rooting for Fleetwood down the stretch today, and I found myself, I was like, man, there's no way that Brooks is gonna give this up.
Yeah, it felt kind of hopeless after a while.
Yeah. What do we think about DJ's performance?
I think he had his like B-C+ game all week, so it's tough for me to read too much into it. I mean, I think it's kind of a testament to him that he was even in it at all.
He played really well Friday. I thought. Like today's round, Sunday's round was a microcosm where he shot 70, which on paper is a good number, especially in the final round of the U.S. Open. It just didn't feel, it felt worse than that, you know. I don't know. It just it felt a little flat, and I think was kind of indicative, at least of his weekend, certainly.
I think he got a bit of a tough draw as well, and just kind of the places he had to play and kind of got punished a little bit by being on the top of the leaderboard yesterday, probably with the conditions getting the way they were. And granted, he kind of gagged it away sooner than that, but still, yeah, I think he was kind of fighting an uphill fight all week.
I mean, Brooks got the tough end of the draw too, even Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, yeah.
He stepped up. I just think it was only a matter of time for DJ with his you know, and granted, I picked him to win last night even, but I think just kind of that was wishful thinking. It was like, it was just a matter of time the way he was hitting the ball.
It was just okay.
He flared a lot of balls out to the right. Yeah. Which typically his, doesn't do.
Yeah. And one thing, I certainly could be speaking of that, which I don't know, but I don't think so. It seemed like in the telecast, you know, they talked about how DJ is more or less like a dead weight putter. Like he tries to dive the ball into the hole. And I think when the course, the green speed especially, and with some of the bumpiness too, even like when it changes so drastically from Friday to Saturday and then changes again from Saturday to Sunday.
Yeah, speed was terrible.
It would
today.
Seem like that would affect that type of putter more than a guy who's just always super aggressive and is, you know, doesn't mind, you know, running it 3, 4, or 5 feet by the hole. He just looked very uncomfortable on the greens this weekend, and I got to think that played a part in it.
To the level at which the DJ is a big game hunter, though, to his last 5 years in the U.S. Open, T4, T2, winner. He was cut last year at Erin Hills, and a solo third this year.
He's like Teddy Roosevelt, man. Like, he's hunting the biggest game.
He's finished 1, 2, 3, and 4 for the last 5 years at the U.S. Open. I mean, it's a tour. That's, again, I know we kind of get caught up talking a lot of winners, but I think performances that in the top five are definitely noteworthy even for somebody that this is 15th top 10 in a major.
I think what's interesting, just, and I'll kind of toss this out to you guys, the difference in kind of Q rating, for lack of a better term, between DJ and Brooks, in that I think obviously DJ gets a lot of fan reaction and people love him for certain reasons. And then you have a guy like Brooks who, for whatever reason, doesn't have that same fan appeal, I don't think. But yet he checks a lot of the same boxes. Like, he's big, he's athletic, he's, you know, tan, good-looking guy. You know, they're very similar, but yet there's this kind of difference at some level. So I don't know. I just find that interesting.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe people don't like his veneers.
Allegedly.
Yeah. I think DJ has a lot more personality than people give him credit for. Like, everybody's like, oh, DJ's dumb. Like, I don't think DJ's dumb. I think DJ's actually really funny, and he's got, like, he's really witty and stuff. He just chooses when to let people in. But
he kind of plays it up a little bit
think,
too, almost.
And maybe Brooks has that, but Brooks doesn't give a shit about showing that to anybody.
And I think I don't know. Maybe you guys back me up or correct me, but I feel like it took a while for DJ to get that also. Mm-hmm. I think when he was kind of first starting to win, it was kind of a lot of the same, like, oh, wow, man, this guy's really good. Like, what's, you know, he sure does hit it far. And, yeah. You know, it was kind of, there wasn't a ton there. It wasn't until, I mean, people just love winners. And, you know, I think you hit a certain point with Dustin won. He played so
won what too like 11,
well over the last
years in a row. Or
yeah,
something
and
like
he's
that?
He's just played so sure. well over the last like 3 years. I think it probably get him a lot of goodwill too.
18 wins, I think, on tour, and like just years of being in the PGA Tour commercials and like every.
Also 4 or 5
well,
years
now that
ever.
I'm thinking of it yeah. too, there's some kind of controversial, salacious off course stuff. Which
everyone's
I'm
got
sure
a DJ story,
a yeah.
and
yeah.
you know he's got a famous fiance and all that. So, but the question somebody threw in, which is it's pretty unanimous when I pulled this out earlier, though, is whose career would you rather have to date, Koepka with two majors or DJ with one?
DJ for sure.
DJ.
I think it's pretty easy.
Yeah,
answer. I think,
yeah. DJ.
I think it'd be more interesting if it was one major to zero, like if you were a non-major winner
yeah.
at all and you had a bunch of PGA Tour wins, would you trade for one major? But I thought it was at least a little thought goes yeah. into that one.
Like, whose career would you rather have, Martin Keimer or Brooks?
I'd say Brooks.
Gosh, I would say Keimer.
Right, it's got to be Keimer, I would yeah. think.
You might be right. That was a short, quick answer. Yeah.
I don't know what the
I mean, the difference, about. What's the difference? A players championship, basically?
Players and a world number one.
Yeah. It's pretty close. Yeah.
What about Brooks or Ricky?
Yeah, I'm just joking.
Please, go ahead.
The excitement in Randy's eyes as he asked that. What a day for Tommy Ladd.
I was not going to be able to contain myself much longer.
it was kind of like the Alonzo morning gif of like shaking our heads at the setup today, but then you saw Tommy making the run and potentially going to win yeah. the U.S. Open. Like, oh, you know, maybe this might be kind of cool. It was exciting. It was a lot of fun. I know it was. I mean, it was an easier setup today, but the scores didn't end up being that low, and his round was far and away the best round of the day and the best round of the week, and tied the best round ever in the U.S. Open, and he had a great look. To shoot 62, and it just was one shot too little.
I mean, really, he had two or three great looks there at the down the stretch.
Yeah,
you know?
It's inevitably, though, it's going to even out some. I mean, he made yeah. a lot of putts today. I don't think it's yeah. that ridiculous at all to to think that he would not make any of those final three putts. I do get it. I mean, it was kind of all that momentum that you thought he was going to add one more with those looks, and especially there on 18 after that shot he hit into 18.
My gosh, the way he hits his irons.
It's amazing.
It's like orgasmic to watch.
It's aspirational. So shout out to Fleetwood and Finno for that run. That was awesome. And the solo second finish, that's going to be that's $1.2 million or something like that for second place at the U.S. Open. I mean,
hopefully we'll see him in Germany this week.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
That'd be exciting.
He's starting to poke around, too. It seems like he's going to break through in a major sooner than later.
Last year and solo second.
Carnoustie could be the spot.
Yeah.
If Leash wasn't going to win that one, I would agree. we touched on Reed, though. I mean, that was I, first of all, kind of forgot he was in the tournament going today. Didn't even realize he was three back starting off the day. Five birdies early. That was a very, very real charge from Reed. I mean, is it safe to say he's got his ears pinned back now and is just going to make charges at these majors at a pretty kind of ridiculous rate? I don't know how many he's going to win, but he's going to be in a lot of these, right?
It certainly seems like it. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. He just did everything well today. I mean, he was just striping it. God, on those first five holes, what was his longest birdie putt? Was like 12 feet or something like that. I mean, he was just striping the ball. We knew with the easy pin locations, we knew there wasn't going to be anything jammed up, you know, back right. So, it was cool to watch. I mean, I obviously had personal rooting interests, but it was pretty cool to see.
He was, as far as I can tell, he was the only guy in the group or in the field to improve each of the four rounds. 73, 72, 71, 68.
Oof. Wow.
Which 71. Is pretty remarkable to be that consistent with how much the conditions and the setup fluctuated.
Yeah, Fleetwood was ping-ponging back and forth. Yeah. The closest two rounds Fleetwood had back-to-back were nine shots between his first and second round. And then he went nine shots better, 12 shots worse, 15 shots better in the final round. That's just special. Rounding out the top five, Tony Finau, that was a tough double to watch there on 18, knowing how much...
Expensive.
Yeah. A lot of money on the line there and a lot of Ryder Cup points there. And he's sniffing around that bottom eight of that list, and that would have been enormous if he could have finished staying tied with DJ at third. But
props to him, too. It kind of seemed like he was... Him and Berger were going to get the early drop from coverage treatment after kind of a rough start. And
they did get dropped at one point.
Yeah, but they battled back. That mm-hmm. was cool to see.
Yeah,
I like Finau. I mean, I hope it would be cool to see him. I always feel like this might be a stupid take, but I always feel like he's in contention without being like a huge threat to win a lot, if that makes sense.
Is that Kuchar?
It's Kuchar-esque. Yeah. But I'd like to see him actually kind of, you know, be an actual threat coming down and just kind of see how he handled it.
Well, I know that he obviously played a different golf course Saturday morning than the guys played Saturday afternoon, but there were also he and Berger both did, but there were also a lot of other guys on the golf course that morning that didn't go out and shoot
right.
several hit under. The shots.
And so that they're, I mean, they obviously got the perfect spot in the draw, I think, and were able to take advantage of it to get in the tournament. But I mean, props to, it's a 4-day tournament and he and Berger both finished in the top six. So, definitely noteworthy performances.
Folks, it was another monster week for our friends at Odyssey Golf. Tron here, just to tell you about them winning their sixth straight major championship putter count for the year. That's right, there have been more Odyssey putters in play than any other brand at all six PGA, LPGA, and Champions Tour majors in 2018. And it wasn't even close. The best in the world choose Odyssey. That's why I have the new Odyssey XO Indy in my bag.
That's why I chose you to do the ad read this
week. Yeah, it's revolutionized my game. My alignment's better. The insert in there is just like, it's like cheating.
Your quick raking game is improved.
I feel like I'm backstopping when I take a putt every time. No, but seriously, I love it. I used to play an Odyssey White Hot number 2 for many years, and this is like the next best upgrade to that I found. So they come in Rossi 7 and Indianapolis shapes and are available in stores or at odyssey.com, odysseygolf.com. Go check them out.
Back to the pod. Are we ready to talk about the old lefty?
Please, happily.
I'm not sure if there's been any takes circulating this weekend on what happened.
We're talking about Steve Flesch.
Correct.
Steve Flesch. I thought he did a great job. Yeah, I thought he was a nice addition to the
broadcast.
Very
good play-by-play.
Yeah.
So,
well prepared.
I think we should lead it off with probably our favorite take of this week. Can you you want to break us down with our boy John Hopkins, what he had to say on Fox?
I think John Hopkins of Global Golf Post, formerly of the Times of London and a couple other distinguished London journalistic entities.
John Hopkins,
yeah,
the U.
Yeah.
They named a college after him after this take.
He was sitting on Fox this morning and just let Phil have it. I mean, I think he's an ass.
In Britain, we'd call him an ass, a silly ass.
Chump.
I thought it was a chump. Yeah, and then Corrigan chimed in with utter dick.
Yeah, that was kind of in response then to Mickelson's
triumph on the
13th.
Yeah. Yeah. That was funny to watch, but also kind of tough to watch what Phil did today. But all right.
I thought Hopkins, if you're going to have that take, I thought he explained it well. I think I would love to see him on more broadcasts. I think he's awesome.
That was good. Randy, being the resident Phil fan here, walk us through from the beginning. I know we covered some of this on our live show and whatnot, but for those that may not have tuned in, let's cover this from beginning to end. What you thought when you initially saw what Phil did on the 13th hole, how it was handled, how the ruling was handled, all of that.
It was obviously just totally surreal. I guess that would be my first initial impression of it. I'll recycle my live show takes. I don't really think it's changed. Where I kind of shake out is what he did was, and kind of verbatim, it was sophomoric, it was petulant, it was immature. The optics of it were terrible. But at the end of the day, you know, it's up to the USGA whether to assess the penalty of disqualification or the two-stroke penalty. And they made their ruling. And so, you know, at that point, it's like, okay, it's done. It's time for everybody to move on. I don't think that absolves Mickelson at all of, like, it was still all of those things I just said. Like, it wasn't a good look. But I don't know. People say, like, cheated. I don't think that's the right word. That doesn't feel right to me. I don't think he...
Because your whole distinction was he took his medicine, he took the penalty.
Yeah, to me, like, cheating is like trying to subvert the rules to your own gain, like without punishment. And I think he was perfectly aware of the punishment and knew he was going to get punished for it, and that was his choice. I think one of the best examples is kind of, you know, American football, the wide receiver breaks free down the sideline and the DB tackles him. And it's like, that's pass interference. Like, I know I'm going to get flagged for tackling this guy, but I'd rather do that than give up, you know, the touchdown. I think that some of that calculus was probably going on in Mickelson's mind, where it's like, yeah, this is going to be the penalty. I accept that, and that's that. So I don't know. I'm hesitant to kind of weave in my Tiger from Augusta in 2013, but to me that was a more clear example of, I know he wasn't intentionally trying to take a bad drop, but the simple fact of it is that he did take a bad drop. And to me that was a subversion of the rules to his gain without punishment. Now,
well, Tiger got the punishment. Well, he got penalized.
But he got penalized for hitting the ball in the water. He then took a bad drop and would not have been punished for it had he not incriminated himself in the post-round interview.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, he wasn't DQ'd, and that was a whole other can of worms.
He wasn't read his Miranda rights before that either.
But to me, that was a more just in the spirit of the game, like purely kind of taking away the optics of it and the silliness of it. Like, that's probably more of an egregious error than what Mickelson did. But
I don't know. I think for me, you know, he did what he did. That's one thing. But then to spin it the way that he did after the fact, like,
that was the worst part.
That was the chicken shit part to me. You know, and then, you know, and it's like, I think that's what more people are almost upset about. It's like, oh yeah, I've been thinking about doing this for years, and like,
because the math doesn't add up. Like, the smart move in that case would have been to go let your ball roll all the way down, pick it up, and go take an unplayable and drop where you just putted from, which would essentially be a two-shot penalty. You'd be play, he was putting for double. He would have been putting for eight from there, rather than you know, hitting the ball while it's moving and taking a two-shot penalty.
Well, that's where it comes back to, you know, like I said on the live show last night, like he was trying to send a message, but he wasn't. I don't think he truly signed his name on the letter of the message. You know, like, I think he should have just, if you're gonna try to send a message like that, you need to follow through. I think DJ, your stance is a little bit different on all this.
My stance, honestly, I think my stance has changed again since we started talking about here. Randy kind of won me over with the pass interference thing. I think that's actually kind of a good way to think about it. My take on this, and I've been kind of rationalizing it or coming to terms with the fact that I think I might be a bit of like a golf anarchist, in that I think that when, like, I most enjoy golf when things are just in utter chaos and just chaos rules, basically. And that is why I think my take is like, yeah, that was like pretty disgusting and like childish and all of that stuff, but like, I don't care. Like, I don't give a shit like what happens. I don't want to argue that he should be put in jail, and I don't want to argue that he was totally fine. Like, I think everybody else arguing is the best. Like, so more of that, please, is my take. But yeah, I'm with you, Tron. I mean, I think that if he was trying to send a message, I think it would, well, on one hand, it would have been better to actually sign his name to the message, like you said. On the other hand, I think it's another example of kind of like the beautiful performance art that is Phil, which is, hey, I'm kind of in control of this circus, and I can almost do anything I want. And I think he's trying to just push that as far as he possibly can.
Lavner tweeted
a quote today that was like, it was him, one of the few things he said walking off the golf course today was like, you know, I think the only question is, what will I do next? And it's like, dude, you might need to seek help. These might be calls for help that you're drunk with power.
The obviously we weren't around for this era,
which
the,
I love. Let me just say
that I love the comparison that you always hear people make whenever somebody's like past their prime or and not showing well of themselves is like Willie Mays when he played for the Mets, like fumbling around the outfield. That's what I felt like I was watching when he quick raked that, or when he ran and hit that. It was kind of like, well, what are you doing, man?
But
like,
there
come
were,
on.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of it, though. Like, I think there were a couple people who were like, oh, what? He's lost his mind. What a confused old man. I'm like, no, he's not. Like, he has nothing to lose.
Is this Phil's version?
40 shots off the lead. Like, it doesn't affect anybody,
is
really.
Is this Phil's version of like Tiger's Kill House?
Maybe.
Where he's just kind of bored, and he's like, I don't, you know.
I just need to feel alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. I think the people that were taking it all the way to the max of, think about the children, and he's disgraced the game. And all, I mean, that was kind of the tankpocalypse.
Well, when people start invoking Mr. Hogan, Mr. Nicholas, Mr. Palmer,
Mr.
It's
Bob
like,
Jones.
You know, that stuff's a little much for me. But I do want to clear up a couple things. I do like Mickelson, obviously. I root for him. I want to believe I would kind of have the same reaction no matter who it was that did it. And, you know, I also would have been kind of totally cool if the USGA said, hey, listen, that was very egregious. We're disqualifying you. Like, yeah, okay, I can see that too. Like, you know, so I don't want it to be like I'm purely being an apologist here.
No, we did the Bubba test earlier. It's like, if Bubba would have done this, what would our reaction have been?
If Bubba would have done this, we would have lost our mind.
We did lose our mind.
No, but like, even it would have been like
people
a supernova.
The Long Island people would have put him on that giant catapult from The Simpsons and threw him out into the sound.
Yeah, I mean, they would have strung him up from the...
Yeah, it would have been awful. Yeah.
Well, and I do think like, you know, something like this is just a ripe opportunity for people who have long had issues with a lot of stuff Mickelson has done. It's kind of a green light just to air him out.
That's what
under the auspices of, yes, of this incident. And certainly maybe there's something to it. But I think for some people, it's years of kind of resentment and frustration with him for a variety of things.
You know what it reminds me of?
Come pouring out.
I think a lot of sports comparisons, a music comparison. I think when The Beatles were kind of at their absolute peak. They wrote the song Hello Goodbye just to prove that they could make a number one hit by doing like the least amount of work that they possibly could. And it was. And that's kind of how I feel about this, is that he's just gotten to this point where he's like, guys, I'm like kind of, I'm like, you can get mad, but like, I don't care. I'm kind of untouchable. And like, so the whole, and I guess
it kind of sounds like Phil's late stage capitalism.
The question now, he might be too big to fail. The question now is like, is he
a lot to that?
Is he untouchable? And you know, a lot of people, and this is such a stupid ass, like, self serious way to talk about this, but like, is this going to damage his legacy? And it's like, dude, he's not a president. Like, who cares?
Well,
but
it's like, yeah,
he almost went to federal prison for insider trading.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, but I don't know. Do you, like, what do you think? Are people going to think about him differently now?
Well, I'm sure some people will, and that's their prerogative, but it's like,
it's more in line with what you're saying, that if you are not a Phil fan, this exacerbates it. And if you are a Phil fan, you kind of like, oh, add this to the hit list, like the tape, the mixtape, like.
But even then, if like if it changes certain people's opinions of who gives a shit, like it just adds to the texture and the menagerie that is Phil Mickelson.
I feel bad for our country, but this is tremendous content.
Tremendous content.
Yeah. Shout out to Darren Rafael. When it all happened, like, look at, that was one of the most exciting moments of the weekend. So from where we're sitting, like, that was good entertainment. If we're talking about this being an entertainment event.
Well, and that's the last thing I was going to kind of point out is, you know, certainly this incident, and I think larger extent, guys like Patrick Reed and even Bubba and Poulter, it's like, as a fan, as somebody who enjoys just watching golf, like, these people and these acts are very welcome. To your point, DJ, it's, you know, it's anarchy, but it's just entertaining. It makes everything entertaining. If everybody acted the same way and were robots, and it just would be boring. It would be such a...
You need villains. You need...
So adds texture.
So from a performance art entertainment standpoint, what I could kind of see... I could have seen him doing a couple things differently. And number one, I could have seen him... I think if he would have come out and been like Mr. Contrition and woken up Sunday morning and be like, guys... You know, I did some internal reflection last night.
Getting
all
the way to the first team.
I really thought about it, and I just want to say it's not the right thing for me to do to continue to play in this championship, which I respect so much. And if he would have WD'd, he would have been a fucking folk hero. Like, that would have been...
Richard Nixon.
Yes.
He brings his whole family out with him.
Like, that would have been as good as it gets. And I'm frankly a little disappointed that he didn't go down that road.
To anyone that may think we're letting Phil off the hook too much, I think we all agree. Like, he should not.
It was very, very shitty. It was a very shitty thing to do.
Like, don't excuse it.
Yeah.
I mean, all things being equal, don't do it. For sure.
And he for sure regrets it. He tried to act like he didn't.
100% going to do that now in matches with you guys, because it doesn't matter. Like, who cares?
What about the kids, DJ?
They should do it too. I think it's hilarious.
All right, since we're talking about performance art, can we just go ahead and talk, because I think the USGA is bordering on performance art too.
I'm ready to go. That was gonna be the next topic. A lot to say, a lot to cover here. Where do you want to start? I think, Tron, you're ready to roll here.
It's like, pick a strategy, pick a way to roll, and roll with it. Like, don't, you know, I think they threw the baby out with the bathwater after yesterday, and after Saturday, if you're listening to this on Monday, and it's...
Right before Father's Day.
It's bad parenting.
You know, it's like, guys, like, you could have said, all right, oh, yeah, we had one or two, you know, flagrant pins, we had one or two borderline pins, the greens got a little fast because we didn't anticipate the wind, which, by the way, the meteorologists totally shit their pants.
It's not great. Forgotten.
But instead, it was, you know, it was like, oh man, we're so sorry. Like, you know, and it totally neuters the entire intent of the tournament, you know, and especially going into it, their whole stated intent was like, yeah, we're not fucking this one up, guys. Sure enough.
I didn't think it got too messed up.
I thought it got more messed up today than it got yesterday, because they played a totally different style of golf course today. Like, there were guys hitting, you know, long irons from downwind, stopping them on the greens that wouldn't have had a prayer of stopping with a wedge yesterday.
I think that's fine between 2 days, though. If that happens in this, like, two different courses on the same day, like, all the players had to say play the same golf course today. I thought Saturday the guys that played in the morning played a different golf course than they played in the afternoon. That's a worse fuck up than just between the 2 days, Saturday to Sunday.
And I think the pin, you know, my other thing is the pins being center of the green on half the holes today, especially the ones down the stretch, just kind of neutered the suspense there at the end.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I mean, I think that I would like to talk to, and I'm sure there are a ton of people listening to this that weren't on Twitter, you know, the whole time listening to people argue about it. But I would be curious of what the non-Twitter, non-echo chamber viewer felt about watching the golf course and how out of control they thought it was, or what they really thought, because I think that that obviously, you know, this was a good example of kind of what happens when everybody gets each other all worked up into a lather, and then players start weighing in, and then they change people's minds, and you know, it's just, it ends up being just this giant kind of kerfuffle about, you know, who's right and who's wrong and who's the villain and who's right, you know, who's the good guy and all this stuff. And you know, you're never going to have like a good, smart conversation about this stuff. So like, I don't know. I thought I agree with you. I think I actually really liked how the course played on Sunday outside of the pin locations. I mean, I thought that the speed was good. I thought things were rolling out in the right ways. I thought bad shots, and not all bad shots, were getting totally penalized.
It was too soft, but I think they had to err on that side.
Yeah, but I do think that Solly had a good point on the live show too, which is, you know, it just proves how fine the line is of what the USGA is able to do and how close you're able to push it before you lose it. And as soon as you take your foot off the gas, you know, it comes all the way back. Like, that, it's just so hard to do.
We'll go back to Jed's tweet.
Yeah.
Should we slowly work in our tweets of the week throughout? Randy, you want to start with tweets of the week?
Yeah.
Speaking of being off Twitter and out of the echo chamber.
Great segue. So TPC Jeb.
Mr. Rammel.
Sorry, I got to quickly unlock my computer. So his tweet was, I quote, "Sneaky brilliant move by the USGA. Annual botching of US Open is an excellent diversion tactic designed to hide its inability to regulate the ball and equipment. I'm already looking forward to next year's disaster." And I think this, I think it's true. You know, I think that's kind of the crux of the argument and the discussion is, we're going to have this every year, the course setup, just because it is such an impossible kind of middle ground to find, where it's like just on the edge of fair and still like holding to their idea of like, you know, 280 as a winning score. But I think, Tron, to your initial point about the USGA kind of being spineless and just reactionary, it's
because it totally undermines everything that they set out to do Friday, you know, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday with how much they overcorrected. I think where, you know, like Solly and Randy, I think you said it earlier on the live show, we, you know, they didn't have to do both soften the greens, slow them down, and put the flags the pins, in the middle.
Yeah, it should have been either or.
You didn't even need to pull up. I pulled up the pin sheet this morning without even – I definitely don't have the green shapes memorized. I pulled it up and was like, wow, that is a lot of center of the green pin positions. It was pretty – and I was anxious to see where they're going to put them today, but it was very clear. I was like, all right, we're going to just put these kind of in – I'm shocked Justin Rose didn't have a great day with where these pins were located today. But yeah, they panicked in two ways. They should have either softened the greens and kept the pins the way that they had them really Saturday, or, you know, not soften the greens and put the pins in the middle of the green.
I do think things get treated a bit like, again, I think it goes back to the echo chamber stuff. I think people a lot of times, like, they decide that they don't want to like something, and then they just kind of look for all the reasons to not like it. And I do think that there were still bad shots that were being penalized and still good shots that were being rewarded today. Like, I kind of liked it. I just didn't, the pins, to your point, Tron, like, down the stretch, there wasn't a whole lot of chances for, it was just a lot of par.
It was like you
golf.
Had to miss
it
the green like completely to get
to make bogeys, yeah, or doubles, yeah, or worse. But I mean, I do think it was important that, you know, four guys that came in tied for the lead, only one of them shot under par, and it was Brooks shooting 68. So it's not like these guys went crazy, crazy, crazy low outside of Fleetwood. But I don't know. It's just it's a weird balance. I was looking it up. So the first round, four people shot under par. Second round, 14. Third round, three people. Obviously, you know, two of them were Berger and Finau, and then today there were 15 people under par. So not a crazy outlier. I mean, it just seems off for Sunday at the U.S. Open.
And it was a reaction to what happened Saturday, which is understood. Well, I think they were very well justified on the width of the fairways. I thought off the tee, the course played fantastic, and it was clear. It's like, all right, we'll let you out here. You want to kind of be in the right side of these fairways. We're going to let you get off the tee. If you miss these fairways, you're going to be punished severely. And on your second shot, you still have to hit these small target greens and try to get at these pins. Is not going to be easy where we're going to put them. I thought from tee to green, I thought the course played great. I thought Saturday afternoon, the greens just rolled out too far. The surfaces did not roll true, and guys like in the DJ wave couldn't hit putts with enough force behind them to actually be trying to make them. They were lagging 12-footers. And that's where I think the championship gets a little out of whack and it stops becoming a talent contest. I thought today, while it was a bit easier, was more enjoyable to watch guys have the ability to make 12-foot putts. I just think that makes for a better championship than what we saw Saturday.
Yes.
I agree. I think
intellectually, I agree with you.
Right. And then I was going to say, which did you have more fun?
I had more fun Saturday.
Yeah. And I think that's like.
It's the one week a year we get that.
It's such a paradox,
like,
I guess.
More fun Saturday.
We're going to watch Travelers this week, and it's going to be a great tournament and all that. But, like, you know, like this week shouldn't have been more. Like, today shouldn't have been more akin to your regular. You know, hey, let's see some birdies down the stretch, PGA Tour.
I just think it's more entertaining Saturday, but I'd rather see a championship get decided the way it was today than the way it would have been Saturday if that had got out of hand. Like, if Finau and Berger would have posted their morning 66s and everyone would have fallen back and lost because the greens got baked out in the afternoon, I don't think that would have been the best way to decide a championship.
Unless it was Fleetwood.
Yeah, unless it was Fleetwood. That would have been fine with me.
I just want to say we're going to have this same discussion every year.
I'm pumped to see how they mess.
Well, what do you think they're going to do with Pebble next year?
Well, you kind of, the question was asked was like, can you screw up Pebble? I'm thinking absolutely.
I think Pebble's already screwed up. So.
But there's a very easy, quote unquote, easy stretch at Pebble Beach. That front nine between like four and, or really between like three and eight, the pros eat that stretch up. Well, they'll probably make that par four.
All right,
this part really matters. there's that stretch that is very like pros, you know, usually make a run at 29 on that side whenever they're during the AT&T every year. Like they're gonna do something with that stretch to make it not nearly as gettable. What is that? We'll see. But
yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
We'll cover that in the next.
Should be interesting.
You know, interesting to see.
I do think that, you know, obviously the RNA has a little bit more weather to kind of fall back on. The PGA Tour doesn't, like, the only other time they've really run the risk of going over the line was Trinity Forest this year, which they totally, you know, erred on the side of like neoconservatism. and then you've got, you know, Players 2016. And it's like, I feel like since the USGA, I don't know if it's the right thing, but the fact that they're kind of tasked with staging the most, you know,
the sternest, the ultimate test.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I feel like they're the ones that are getting backed into this corner, by themselves with that mission statement and with the ball and the clubs in general, but also just like, you know, the PGA Tour doesn't give a shit. They want to live under par. You know, so like they're the only ones, like that's why we're only having this discussion once a year instead of half the weeks, you know,
right,
on tour.
Yeah.
I do think that, you know, I know a lot of people roll their eyes at player complaints, but KVV had a good kind of Twitter thread about, like, no, the players don't do this at any other organization in any way in golf, the way they react to the USGA, the way they're so fearless and criticizing
them. And that's where I think I'm kind of getting at with, like, the echo chambers. Like, now, you know, there a lot of times it kind of feels like you're just firing bullets into a corpse at some point, you know? Like, I think a lot of these guys are like, you know, oh, it's kind of cool to rip on the USGA and just, so if there's any chance to do it, let's do it. And I don't know, I'd mentioned on the live show, I think Randy and I were talking about this off air, but I have, it's a very half-baked take that I can't seem to get across the finish line, but there were a lot of players that were complaining on Twitter, and a lot of players that like weren't even in the field that were complaining on Twitter about the setup, and oh, the USGA ruined another one, and
they can
screw anything up, and this is a disaster. I'm not even gonna watch, and blah blah blah.
Take our game back.
We need to take our game back from these amateur hacks. And A, there's something different between, you know, criticizing the setup and critiquing the setup. And I think a lot of players, like, you know, I think JT had like smart things to say about, you know, pin locations, and those all seemed pretty.
Patrick Reed had good things
to say about, yeah, hey, you know, a couple pins were pretty tough, but the rest was pretty fair. And everybody else, you know, who's watching on their couch is lighting these courses on fire. And I'm kind of, I don't know what the take is, but I'm kind of thinking like a lot of you guys that are complaining about this are, you play the kind of golf that makes me not want to watch golf. And you play the kind of, the golf that makes me fall asleep a lot is you guys shooting, you know, 18 under on a course that I, you know, don't really care to watch. And this week felt way different than that, for better or worse. So I don't know, from an entertainment standpoint, if we want to go back to that conversation, I thought both Saturday and Sunday were really interesting and cool. I thought Thursday was awesome. But yeah, I don't know where you draw the line as far as like catering to the players, you know, because I don't know if they're really the ones that you should be listening to, you know. And
well, Randy, they, well, they're Randy complicit had a, in all this too.
Yeah, and I think they obviously have an interest in not looking foolish as well. You know what I'm saying? So, Randy, I think you kind of mentioned that on the live show as well. Is that you kind of can't have it both ways.
Yeah, and I think I'm with you. It's like I got this idea and it's like 60-70% of the way there, but I think it comes down to something like, you know, at first blush, if it's between like the PGA Tour and all these tour players versus the USGA, I think at first blush it's like, yeah, oh, screw the USGA, I'm with the tour players, you know. And then you start to think about it a little bit more, or at least I do, and it's like, well, wait a second, like outside of really like Tiger and Phil and maybe a handful of other guys, it's like, what organization, which entity really does or could have more effect and direct impact on my enjoyment with the game of golf? And I think it's probably the USGA. And so that's where I come back to. It's like, you know, I think some of these tour players, I won't name names, like Dirt McGirt and Wes Bryan and, you know, Keegan Bradley. It's like
Sergeant Major Billy Horschel.
Yeah, it's like, you know, if you guys want to start this fight, I don't know. I'm not going to be on your side. I think the USGA has the potential to much more influence and impact my personal enjoyment with the game of golf. And that's far outside of watching these guys play like Houston and, you know, San Antonio. I think that's kind of, we're on the same wavelength there, but I haven't really... It's not all the way there. I got to think it through some more.
Yeah,
I think we can hopefully all agree that it seemed like, at least in the Twitter echo chamber, that the extremes came out way too quickly.
Exactly.
I was hard on the setup Saturday. I thought it was a bit, just like I said about the greens, but it was not. They didn't lose the golf course. It was not a travesty. It was nothing like 04. And the reaction was so strong. It was just like, God, I mean, let's have some perspective on this. I mean, it was a tough day out
Solid,
there.
I'm gonna stop you right there. I can't believe you're gonna just undercut Zach Johnson's assertion. It's gone.
It surpassed that. I mean, yeah. It was on the edge, but we've surpassed
it's
that.
Gone. There's nothing left.
Yeah, a lot of good people in this community. The PGA Tour is a community.
They were the way people were presenting it, like FEMA was out there like assessing the damage and trying to like get people some drinking water out there.
It's like, will you rebuild? It's like, well, yeah.
We'll try.
What other choice do we have?
This is what happens when you build under par. You know, you're subject to the storm surge and the floodwaters.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, so I think this kind of is a good point for me to roll out my tweet of the day or tweet of the week, which came from Shane Ryan, who said, "Would it be so friggin' hard for the USGA to design just one course where you hit it into this sort of giant bowl 18 times and the ball funnels into the hole and then dancers come out and the whole gallery starts chanting class act over and over so we could have a true test?" And I think that probably we could have saved the last 15 minutes. I think that kind of sums up what I've been trying to say.
Yeah,
pray for Southampton. I can't believe they lost their golf course. But no, I think it's just, again, I don't think it was, they overreacted a bit today, but definitely not to Aaron Hill's levels or anything like that, and just thought everyone was just way too eager to just jump all over.
Yeah,
the
and that's
USGA.
What I don't want to happen. Don't want to happen is where it becomes like this cool thing to just shit all over the USGA for no reason. And
for
and
course setup. I think course for the setup, yeah. equipment, it's all justified. Yeah. The course setup
and even some of the course setup is justified too, but wait until it's justified or wait until, I mean, just, yeah, have perspective.
It's hard to untangle those things. Stuff. I think that's what you kind of come back to. It's like those issues are so intertwined.
It's near impossible. Okay, I'm ready to move on from USGA if you guys are, and I think we need, it's, we're pretty deep in this. We got to talk about Fox.
Yeah, well, sorry, last thing real quick. I think in the spirit of the USGA, I'd like to see, you know, just been doing a bit of reading over the weekend here. I'd like to see one of the players maybe try to pull a CB McDonald, yes. which I think could be a good Phil thing to do.
I was going
to
say, I can think of one guy who might.
Yeah, and CB McDonald, for those that don't know, I think in 1894, before the USGA started, they were trying to organize American golf a little bit and decided to host two national championships, quote unquote. And, The first one was at, I think, Newport Country Club, and it was stroke play, and he finished second, and he loudly disputed the results, claiming that it was bullshit to have a, I'm not quoting here, claiming that it was bullshit to have a road running through the course. So,
or no, a stone wall, I think.
A stone wall, yeah, sorry. So he protested loud enough that they threw out the results. He also thought it was bullshit to decide by stroke play. So they had a next one was match play. It was like a month later. he finished second, loudly disputed that as well, saying it's bullshit that, you know, one course should be allowed to decide who the national champion is. So after all of this, and the USGA just rolled out something. Apparently there's some new research that some other people remember this differently, but this is the story that's been going around for like 100 years, is the heads of the five families, the five original golf courses of the USGA that, you know, everybody kept mentioning, they all got together to talk about these national championships, and the USGA was founded. CB McDonald was the first vice president or something, I believe. And then they hosted a real US amateur.
He rolled that.
And he won 12 and 11. So you do the math. I think it's time to maybe, you know, give a rebirth to the USGA, headed by Phil Mickelson, where he says, guys, it's gone too far. We need to all get together. This is bullshit. Throw out the results. Let's really decide. Maybe another task force, similar to when he rolled the bus over Tom Watson and they revamped the whole Ryder Cup process. I think there's kind of two precedents for this.
It sounds like he could get UCF on board, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
The NCAA side,
no doubt. You know? I think you blow all of it up and you just kind of start over.
The USGA, I think, now needs to become the USAGA, the U.S. American Golf Association.
Not my golf association.
On the Phil note, I know we said we were going to go outside this house for the tweet of the week, their favorite tweet, but mine might have been DJ Pies when he had the little image of Phil from the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup when they got a two-hole penalty on one hole, and Phil said, I spotted your best team two shots, and we still beat them, or two holes and we still beat them. When you did that for Beef, the comparison to Beef after his debacle.
Too many people are going to forget that Phil made a 10 and had this whole giant clusterfuck, and he still beat Beef. That's playing phenomenal. It's phenomenal.
And Ricky.
All right, let's move on to the broadcast. We were pretty effusive in our praise for Fox going into it. First off, I'll throw it out. What did you guys think of coverage Thursday and Friday?
I thought Thursday and Friday were an absolute disgrace.
Disgrace.
No, I'm being dead serious, too. Like, it was, like, they were totally rudderless. And actually, I take that back. They had no rudder whatsoever because they didn't need one because they were just going straight ahead with the feature.
It was almost like on autopilot. They were stuck on autopilot.
Yeah. Like, they weren't covering a golf tournament. It was a pseudo-popularity contest with these featured groups.
I think that was true for when Tiger was on the course. Right, for when the Friday afternoon and I'm sorry, Thursday afternoon and Friday morning were the worst parts. When they started on FS1 Thursday morning, they were good. I thought it was good. Like, they were bouncing around a decent amount, and then they got so locked. Maybe I'm thinking opposite. When it was Spieth's group that was on, Spieth and Phil, their group that was on the course, they locked in on them despite the fact that they were a million over par.
Yeah, I mean, I just, like, why have featured groups online and on other channels when you can't, you know, when you're watching that anyway on the broadcast? And then B, it just, you know, even when they did show other players, they were showing almost exclusively putts from guys that weren't in the featured groups. And there just wasn't a whole lot of variety of players. And then some of the, you know, like you bring Bill Hemmer on from Fox Business for an interview.
That was a miss, I felt. Like,
yeah.
They had some hits with interviews, I will say.
Bill Hemmer's interview was sweet. Basically, I think he was under the guise that Shinnecock was a public course that everyone should go play. That's kind of his whole vibe of what he was saying.
It was very, very Fox Newsy.
Yeah.
Angle.
If you guys worked harder, you'd be able to play here.
I thought they rebounded well. I thought Saturday was, you know, I thought as soon as kind of they started covering the actual tournament and the drama of the tournament, I thought they did a good job on Saturday and Sunday. I especially enjoyed this morning. Sunday morning was with Hans, Faxon, and Bacon. I thought it was, like, I learned more in the first 2 hours of coverage this morning than I have watching any coverage in probably this year.
I don't know how every broadcast doesn't have like an architect on. Hans was so good at, I don't want to say dumbing it down for viewers, but like just telling viewers what they needed to know about it. He didn't nerd out too hard, but explain like why this, a Redan, how that works and what that means and why this is relevant to the championship, why the fairways are wide, why they have these shaved down areas. And he just brought all of those, that to the screen that I feel like is missing from a lot of places.
Well, I think that's our biggest complaint about CBS, right? Is that they don't take the time to basically set the table for 3 weeks down the road, you know, where I think doing that architecture stuff like that teaches you something. And then you remember that for the next broadcast and then you're a smarter viewer down the road. And it's just, it takes that little bit of investment to actually do that, to make people theoretically, to, you know, make them more engaged and smarter. So I don't know. I the only thing I'd take issue with, and I'm not a professional TV producer like Tron is, but I think that, you know, it's easy to remember or easy to forget that, you know, we're a pretty vocal minority of golf fans probably.
Yeah.
And I think that
it's not even 80-20.
Like, yeah, it might be 90-10 or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, I think there's probably 10 to 20% of the people watching are feeling that same way. Like, hey, show me, you know, show me more of this guy. Why aren't you showing Grimmer? Why aren't you doing this? Show me, you know, tell me who's in the field. Whereas I think the 80% are, oh, shit, Tiger's playing. What's Tiger doing? Or what's Phil doing? Or I'm tuning in for one of my three or four broadcasts a year. You know, what's this person doing? And I don't know. It's so hard. It's such a hard balance. Like, I don't know how to do that or what the answer is. But
my issue with it was that it didn't feel like I was watching a major championship the first couple of days. And I know it's Thursday, Friday, and I felt like they did a great job of flipping the switch, and I felt like what I was watching this weekend was important.
Yeah.
But it felt like a normal PGA Tour event on Thursday and Friday.
It's
just
like a glorified PGA Tour live stream.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought, this is a major. This is supposed to feel really important. And yeah, you can tell the story of the big names and work them into it very easily without showing them walking in between shots and showing them walk a distance after the shots. That's,
or standing around.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when there's 10 guys left on the course on Saturday and Sunday afternoon, there's plenty of time for that. When there's 80 guys on the course, I thought that they kind of lost that a little bit.
I think
that's
part of the thing. And, you know, DJ, I've been doing this a long time. So. but, you know, obviously everybody wants to see Kat. Everyone wants to see DJ, yeah, Rory, those guys. But I don't think...
Hemmer.
Yeah. I don't think showing those guys is you know, all, pretty much all their shots is mutually exclusive with.
No, I agree. I'm with you.
They could have moved around.
And I thought Buck talked about that a lot on the podcast last week, which I was kind of amped for, which was, you know, this idea that on Saturday, Sunday, it's cool to see the body language stuff, and it's cool to see them between shots, and it's cool to see them, you know, how do they read putts, and what are they talking about with the caddy, and all that stuff. Whereas Thursday, Friday, I agree with you guys. It's kind of, you know, just show as many golf shots as you can and move around and jump quickly.
The tournament hasn't shrunk itself yet.
Yeah.
And there's still, you know, like, hey, we want to watch it shake out. Don't just treat it like it's this exhibition with these two groups.
Yeah. I'm with you. I agree.
And I think once they flipped the switch over to the weekend, the Phil stuff kicked off really their weekend, and I thought they handled it really well. Having David Fay on was fantastic. So the guy that tweeted, though, that he was like the guy that was testifying after getting immunity was pretty fantastic. That was fantastic. But, I mean, that was important. And Buck did a really good job actually like pushing some of the USGA guys on the ruling and kind of a lot of the things that were going on the ruling and the setup. And I thought, I don't know, they did a great job of telling the story of the golf course and showing where it was getting out of control potentially, showing some of the tough pins and why guys were complaining. I thought they told that story really well.
Yeah, and I thought, I mean, Curtis Strange, that was like the Frost Nixon interview of Phil just, you know, basically incriminating himself in this whole rule breaking thing. I mean, I thought that was cool that he, you know, I forget what he said, something like it's a simple question, you know, what happened on 13 or what'd you do? But yeah, I thought he pressed him pretty good, which was which was interesting and kind of awkward, which was, you know, delightful.
Randy, you were pretty fired up on Thursday, Friday. I never see you fired up about coverage.
Yeah, for the reasons you guys mentioned, I just thought they got to be able to get from that group to other places on the golf course. Just cut to it and then come back if need be. They were just spending way too much time on those feature groups. I think everything changed after the audio difficulties late Friday afternoon, where, you know, without any audio, they were maybe almost forced to then show more shots. And then from that point on, I agree the weekend was much better. I was just going to add two things, too, that really haven't been mentioned yet. I think one, the limited commercial interruption was awesome.
Yeah.
Shout out
Joe Ford.
Yeah, there was a big flow.
Rolex, I think they're standing
to
the Hall
telecast.
Of Fame right
now. Yeah, yeah. There, you know, there were long, long stretches of golf, which was great. And then the second thing, I think a strength of Fox was almost a weakness. You know, whether you like the microphone cup or not, I do think it has the ability to pick up very interesting audio. But unfortunately, a lot of times it's like, you know, cussing and, you know, stuff they can't really air. And so you get all these little breaks in the audio, and it almost like having – it almost just is there to remind you, like, of all this interesting audio that, we can't let you hear that.
That's a good point.
And so it's like
– it's off limits.
Yeah, it's like, and just don't even give it – you know, don't even tease us with it.
I felt like they were over-bleeping. It wasn't even necessarily bleep cuss words that they were bleeping. It felt like, I don't know, just random times they were going to the 7 seconds delay.
Yeah,
like, and
sometimes I was like, I didn't know if it was, like, technical difficulty or if it was being cut. I don't know, but it was just like – and then they would come back, like the Deloitte thing with Fleetwood and Caddy today was, you know, was very interesting. I almost wish they would have done more of that throughout the telecast, throughout the 4 days. I wish there was a channel or an online version where it would just be like just pure raw audio.
I would pay a premium for the audio.
I don't understand why everybody gets so triggered about the mics and the cups.
I don't either.
Yeah, I don't know.
People saying that it was piped in. Yeah. Like, no, they clearly have microphones in the cups. Like, that might be
the definition of who cares.
Yeah. I love it. Even as simple as like the guys going, like missing a putt and going by the hole and taking a deep breath. I think that adds something. Yeah. It kind of takes you there. It's like, all right, that guy.
I thought their wind.
Yeah, the
graphics were sick.
A lot of the graphics were cool.
Yeah.
They would come and do a big aerial of the whole golf course and show it was 15 miles an hour on the west side of the course. It was 19 miles an hour on the other side of the course. And
yeah, I mean, I still thought it was mostly good.
Yeah.
I hear your guys' complaints on Thursday and Friday, but I thought it was good. Yeah. I don't know. I have a hard time getting too fired up about this stuff.
They did pick up some
vulgarity.
They did pick up some vulgarity from Patrick Reed when Reed was standing over a shot. You'll have to go check
not
the internet
from Patrick
for that one.
Reed,
right,
yes.
Correct.
From Summit, yeah.
That content's behind the paywall.
Now I understand why we're not having more opens in the New York area. Yeah. Like every 4 or 5 years is enough, I think.
Which may be my favorite moment of the week was Stenson on Sky Sports getting ready to do an interview, and they say something to him about swearing. He's like, well, good thing you told me because I just said fuck over there. It's like, Stenson, we are actually live. And he's, oh, I'm sorry. So it's clear as day, big F-bomb drop.
I think that's
Sky.
A huge, you know, flies in the face of what the game stands for. It's disgusting.
It's disgusting.
They should DQ him.
If we're ready to move on from Fox, well, I want to hear what you guys' biggest disappointments were of the week. Before we move on from Fox, shout out to our boy Shane Bacon. Awesome job. It was just so he was seamless.
I forgot he was on there a lot, and not because he was like forgettable. It's just
natural.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. And I mean, it's whatever. I know we're kind of this is a very inside small baseball that nobody probably cares about, but I mean, we're all buddies with him, and it's been awesome to see him go from doing this lowly podcast to going on and
to shot makers
to shot makers and then to actually doing he was in the final round of the US Open. He's calling golf shots. It was awesome.
It was awesome. He did a great job with that. It was funny to just he was here about a month ago hanging out here, and then we talking about it, but then actually hear him on TV was like, all right, this is a major major career step. So
I do feel like too the personnel that they used on the entire telecast was more it seemed like the whole scheme was more focused this year. Like there was everybody had more of a purpose.
They have so few reps even over the course of a few years that it's like Bacon even mentioned, he's like, I wish we had like 10 events a year. If we could do this 10 times together, we'd be even that much better at it. So
what can I just do a quick shout out to Ken Brown.
Yeah, well,
the guy is just
aspirational.
He had a walk out there today.
A WOK.
A walk.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He was going to do a stir fry or something.
Yeah. Like, if there was somebody to, like, take over the Mr. Rogers franchise, like, he's the guy in my mind who would be, like, that type of guy. Like, if there's a better person in the world than Ken Brown. And I've never met the guy, so this is all through, like.
Never met Mr. Rogers.
This is all through, like, 30-second segments, like, once a year on TV. But he just seems like an exceptional person.
New Mr. Rogers documentary coming out pretty soon. We should go see that. Yeah.
Who's your guys' biggest disappointment of the week?
I think Spieth for me. I don't know. I always talk myself into picking him every week because he just seems like, you know, the fit for the thinking man's golf course, and he's going to out-strategy everybody, and he just didn't have it this week. It was a bummer to see.
I was going to say Spieth, so I guess in the interest of picking somebody else.
I mean, you were talking a lot about your high hopes for Scott Gregory.
Yeah, Scott Gregory.
You let us down.
Let me down Thursday. Yeah, I guess along in that very same vein is Rory. I just think I don't know. There's just something. I'm not smart enough to put my finger on it, maybe, but there's just something missing, I feel like, watching him play right now.
Well, I was going to say Rory, so I'm going to say Leish, just because I feel like he was in really, really good position heading into Saturday, even after 6-7 holes on Saturday. And then, you know, just in the conditions, I think the firmer it gets, the more he thrives typically. And, you know, that was kind of the complaint about just Augusta this year was, hey, it just got really soggy there on Saturday. And you know, and I think this was his time to shine. And, you know, I mean, obviously he'll have plenty more shots, but I was expecting a little bit more from him.
I was gonna say Rory, but not gonna follow two people that wanted to say Rory. I'll say Phil. I think, you know, if we want to hang on to this belief that he's gonna win one of these, I'm gonna need you not doing that.
Would you say you're not mad at Phil? You're just disappointed.
I am. I'm quite disappointed.
Eamon Lynch just wrote off. He wrote a column this morning. Just wrote off Phil's entire future U.S. Open. Like, it's over. Like, this was it.
That's a fair take.
I mean, we're going to Pebble next year. I don't know. Let's chill. Let's just see.
I had one more disappointment while you guys were talking. My disappointment was that Poulter didn't stick around.
Yeah, that would have been
in real contention longer.
That would have been tremendous content.
The triple and the 7-5 to end things on Friday kind of took a lot of wind out of his sails. I think he would have been in like the last group Saturday had he not done that, and that could have been spectacular.
What do you guys think on he tweeted some stuff about the harassment that he was getting out there from the crowds. Where do you stand on Poulter getting verbal harassment from a New York crowd in the US Open?
I mean, I'm against it. Yeah. I'm out on anybody getting a verbal assault out there, but it's I don't know. That stuff is just, it's gone way too far. I don't know. It just becomes a game of one-upsmanship and everybody trying to. The problem is that nobody's, including all of us, nobody's as funny as they think they are. So everybody, you know, it's like the whole thing is just, it's these people, these unfunny just dipshits that are like trying to one-up each other, and it just is a blender of terrible stuff.
Big gravy.
Unless it's funny. Yeah, but it's just so rarely is.
I'm just like, yeah, man. Like, I don't think I'm ever, like, I'm, that's the one time I've ever done that. I don't think I'm ever going to run it back.
Yeah, exactly. That was your moment.
Yeah.
Well, I understand it. I guess I just, this Ryder Cup spillage over into other events. Like, we can hate Ian Poulter at the Ryder Cup, but don't harass him in a stroke play event. It's not, that's not, I don't think fair. I know.
Yeah, and it sucks. And then you got the people, you know, posting it on Instagram and then trying to shop it around to people. Like, oh, here's me blowing up Bubba Watson on his way from the range to the first tee. Like, oh, cool, man. Like,
probably don't do that.
Thanks. Yeah,
that's
thanks
kind
for,
of shitty.
Yeah, thanks actually, for contributing to the discourse.
Somebody emailed us that. Yeah, please don't.
Yeah, yeah. Don't do that. It's terrible.
You are not supporting that kind of behavior.
Unless
anyway.
It's funny.
Yeah.
Which it rarely is.
Like, I mean, guys, I mean, shit, Stenson yesterday. Had a, you know, he told somebody to zip it. Like, who's out there, like, riding Stenson?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's... You know, I feel like the guy would kill me.
Sergio might have had the moment of the week, though, when he was asked on Saturday, like, what are Saturdays for? And he waited for the crowd to get quiet, and he said to the guy, fuck you in the ass.
Which, yeah, look, that's not great either. It's uncalled for as
well.
Tough
to argue that take, though.
I feel like there's middle ground between the two. I saw one person responded and said that the only people that should be allowed into golf tournaments are registered voters, which
might be kind of a recent way.
Yeah, which I think is probably taking it a step too far, but at least it was a new idea I hadn't heard before.
I'm not gerrymandering.
No, and, yeah, we're not trying to get into a whole voter ID thing, and you know, it's a whole other issue.
I think two guys I want to give a shout out to: Xander Schauffele,
Disease X.
I think he's got a new nickname henceforth.
Disease X.
Which is allegedly starting to bucket head.
Allegedly,
in China.
Could be airborne.
Yeah, 4 billion people.
What's ever. Your source on that?
InfoWars. but he shot 72, 74, 72, 68. And then good showing for Matthew Fitzpatrick, but that's not the second guy. I'm going to shout out DJ Defunk, Dylan Meyer.
Yeah, how cool was that?
Really T20 strong showing. He and Brian Gay, actually. Shout out to Brian Gay.
I mean, it was a mixed leaderboard. It was cool to see
that
guys.
That kind of, you know, goes to show you that the course. Shit, Matthew Pavon. We still don't know who he is. I don't think I've seen him hit a shot yet, but man, he finished T25.
Maybe we'll see him in Germany this week.
That's true.
Yeah. On that note, DJ and I are going to Germany this week for the BMW International. Happy to get back mixed up in the European tour scene. And then Randy and I are going the following week up to Chicago for the KPMG Women's Open. So we're redistributing assets here a little bit over the next couple of weeks. And we had a lot of questions come in on Twitter. We didn't even get to a lot of them. Other than Ryan Snee asked, how much money is in Tron's trust fund?
You know what, guys? It's a blind trust.
How did your betting go this week?
Oh, man, I was close. I went steep on, like, top tens.
That's what the house loves to hear. Oh, I'm so close.
I had Matthew Fitzpatrick.
I was up for
like
so
19
long.
To 1 keep for a top back. 10. And I had Sam Burns for a top 10. And it was, yeah, there was a lot of close calls, but no big hits.
I got one kind of, I know we're trying to wrap here. I got Tron, you kind of brought it up, and it's kind of a existential or philosophical kind of thought experiment. But with the winner this week being one over par, and like, how are we supposed to live under par? Like,
it's crazy.
Par's irrelevant.
I'm not sure what to do.
Well, if par's irrelevant and we're supposed to live, like, then our lives are irrelevant, right?
Yeah, it's just
weird messaging.
Schrodinger's cat.
Some questions. You just start scratching the surface, and
yeah, gosh, careful how much. Yeah, careful how far you pull that thread.
All right. On that note, let's wrap it up.
I think we've exhausted the takes.
We're travelers this week. Kind of upset we're going to be on the other side of the world for that one.
Big Randy's going to be locking it down.
You got that? You got us covered on the travelers.
Yeah, designated survivor. I think we're going to try to get a mailbag out right this week.
Working on mailbag.
Get some of those questions from the refuge. And
episode 2 of
Tourist Sauce.
Sauce
launches tomorrow. It'll be out on YouTube before it'll be out on Twitter. So go check that out. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. You'll get a nice little notification when it goes live. We don't post too many videos. You're not going to get blown up if you subscribe.
We don't post fundamentalist Islam. Yeah,
I know. Everything is totally inoffensive.
And if you miss episode 1, above board, get back on and watch episode 1. We're very proud of this season, and we promise it's going to get better and better with each episode.
Episode 2 has us going to Kingston Heath and Victoria. And fun stuff ensues.
A couple of goat tracks down in Oz, huh?
yeah, exactly.
It's a tough life. All right, thanks everybody for tuning in. We will be back later this week, hopefully with some interviews from Germany. In the meantime, cheers.
Welcome. Cheers.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about in?
That is better than most. Better than most! Expect.